Okay, so Ecclesiastes has been talking about life, and we've been looking at what it's been saying about life the past several weeks. Today it's going to say something different about life. We're going to look at a different aspect of life under the sun. And I'm going to start with a picture for you. And so this picture is, I remember when I was in school. And the teacher is up there talking, and you're sitting there in your desk, and your friend is sitting next to you, and your friend and you are kind of whispering something. The teacher doesn't know what you're saying, and your friend says something that is just so funny, and you want to laugh, but you can't, and you're holding it in. You're trying to not laugh. And you ever have that? That ever happened to you? You want to laugh, but you can't because you're not supposed to laugh there.
I don't think I can keep it. I just let
it You can't keep it in.
It happened several times.
Yeah, but you know the experience where you've just got to laugh because it's so funny,
Yes,
but you
yes.
can't. Okay. There's a time to laugh, and there's a time not to laugh. And you don't crack jokes at a funeral,
No.
and you don't get all morbid at a wedding party. Those are different situations, and you have to act a certain way in those situations, appropriate to the situation. And so, we're going to talk today about, how shall I say it, life and proper times for different kinds of things. But before we do that, I want to review. So, chapters 1 and 2, you tell me, what are they about? That we've talked about two big ideas that are in chapters 1 and 2, and actually that are going to come up all throughout the book. What are those two big ideas?
One is seems everything is vanity, meaningless.
That's right.
Starting from the first verse of the first chapter
That's
to
right.
the end of the second chapter,
Yep.
all meaningless.
Okay.
And but these meaningless the meaning actually based on if you put God the center, if you put God in it, if you have God in it.
There's
You can
meaning.
enjoy. You can enjoy your life, and
Okay.
the true joy was there.
Okay.
But if there is no God in here, it's all based on your own desire.
Yeah.
That's meaningless.
Okay. So that's one of the big ideas. All of life is meaningless. It's vanity. It has no point apart from God. Under the sun. Life under the sun. Okay. What's the second big idea? It's what we talked about last week. You can look at chapter 2, verse 24.
Nothing better for a person than he should eat, drink, and find enjoyment in his toil. This is also, I saw it from, so God wants us to enjoy
That's right.
our life.
Life is vanity, but enjoy it. Right?
And to see that it's all from God.
Yes. That's right. Why are we to enjoy it? What does it say?
It's from the hand
It's from
of
the hand of
God.
God.
From the hand of God. God made these good things for us.
That's right. Okay, it's come from God. Life has come from God. Life has good things in it. And those good things are gifts from God. And last week we looked at this idea all throughout the book that it's in chapter 3, verse 13, it's in chapter 5, verse 18, it's in chapter 8, verse 15, it's in chapter 9, verse 9. It's an idea that keeps coming back, kind of like a chorus in a song. And so this idea is a theme. It's not just a one verse thing, it's a theme of the book, that you're to enjoy this life. And the fact that it's a gift from God is something that's mentioned again and again and again and again. And so how do you put those two ideas together then? Vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Enjoy the life that God has given you under the sun. How do you reconcile? Because on the surface, those ideas just don't seem to fit together. Nope. So how do they fit together?
We can enjoy what God has given and not focus on the things of earth, because they're vanity.
Okay, sure. So if they're gifts from God, then they're not God. If you turn them into God, if you make life the main thing, this is kind of what we've been talking about going through, right? If you make God the main thing, it goes bad. Life goes bad when it becomes the thing for which you live. But when God is the thing for which you live, and you see life as good gifts that He has given you, you're free to enjoy them as His gifts. And so, if it's the main thing, it's vanity. It's meaningless, it's purposeless. It's when money is what you live for, it will be empty. But if God is what you live for, and God grants you some money to enjoy for whatever purpose, and He'll have you give some of it, by the way, enjoy it. Okay, that's review. Now we're going to get into tonight. Solomon's going to introduce a new idea about life, chapter 3. I'm going to read verses 1 through 15. For everything, there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceived that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before Him. That which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. Okay. What I want you to do is take a minute, look over these verses, and I'm just going to ask you for some observations. Just what do you see in these verses? So what do you see? Just any observation you've got.
So here in verse 13, it's brought up the idea is all the eating and drinking and the, your life, your satisfaction in the toy is the gift from God.
Yes.
So it's brought up again.
That's right.
But before that, it's talking a lot about time for everything. So it seems to me it's more like a God has his plan for everything. When the time has come, God will make it happen. God will make it happen.
Okay.
So he will tell you, oh, this is time for you to gain, or this is time for you to give up. There is time to search. Sort of like that. Or God will have the whole plan for everything. This is my observation.
Okay. Someone else. Just what's something you see? Just one thing that you see in the text.
Verse 14, receive that whatever God does endures forever.
Yeah.
Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken away from it. So if God does it,
that's right.
Permanent.
Yeah.
It can be changed.
Okay, good. Okay. Anything else? Do you have anything?
Yeah. From verse 9, first that God has given these things. God has given him some things to do, 12. But it's interesting that it says that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. It's like for us to be occupied with.
Yes.
Kind of, for us to do some kind of work is how I interpret that.
Okay.
The thing that he has given me to do for myself is to be a nurse, to be a mom, to be a wife.
Okay.
And those are things that are given by God to do.
Yes.
And then the next part, he has made everything beautiful in its time. So the things that God has given us to do, when we do them, we're busy with them, then we'll see, I guess we'll see the beauty in it.
Okay. Good. Verses 1 through 8. Just look at those verses. What is the main idea?
It's about time.
Yes,
everything.
That's right. There's a time for everything.
Yep.
Okay? And it's that idea, that main idea, is really summarized in verse 1 before he goes into there. Verse 1, he says, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. And then he illustrates it, a time for to be born, a time to die, a time for this, for that, for this, for that, and so on. Opposites is what he gives you. Okay, and then look at verse 11. So after he says all of that, he then says again, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of see before the summary and afterwards a summary, and then he gives in the middle sort of a list of all of these examples of things that he's talking about. What does it mean that everything has a time? That's verse 1. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. What does that mean, that everything has a time?
A purpose.
A purpose, okay.
God has his plan.
He has a plan.
And in verse 11, there is a sentence that made me feel very interesting. He said, he has made everything beautiful in his time. He has also set eternity in the human heart.
Yes.
Yet, no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
But no one can know that.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was really a little bit sad, actually.
That's good. We're actually going to talk about that later.
That was,
That's something we're going to bring up, is what you just brought up. But that's a really good observation.
Yeah.
So what does it mean that God makes all things beautiful in its time?
Yeah.
You may have to wait for the thing to become beautiful.
You might, because it's in its time.
It might be my time, but it may not be God's time yet.
That's right.
So I have to wait for his time to unfold.
Yeah, the beauty is in its time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, the beauty isn't in your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, it's more like because God created the whole world for good. Mm-hmm. That was for good.
He did, so originally.
Everything he created, even the time he created time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was beautiful.
That's right.
God created everything that was beautiful. We meant to be, we are a creation. Mm-hmm. So we are, mm-hmm. in his eye, we are beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everything he created is beautiful. This is what I'm, yeah.
So all of this, you know, everything, there is a season, a time for every matter. He's made everything beautiful in its time. And then, you know, time for this and that. What does all this say about God? One, you've mentioned, he has a plan.
Yeah.
You should see in these verses that there is a plan. What else? What's it say about God?
Almighty power.
Okay, yeah. You should see power in this. Sovereignty. You should see that God is bigger than this life.
Yes.
Because all of that stuff, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up, to kill, to heal, to break down, to build up, and so on. You know what all that stuff is? Life. But this is saying, God's bigger than that. Whatever in your life you can think of, God's bigger than that. You know, a time to study, mm-hmm. right? A time to play. And but God's bigger than studying, and God's bigger than playing. Mm. A time to be born, a time to die. Your birthday, the day you were born, was written in God's book before the foundation of the earth. And God knows the day you will die, right now. It's also written in his book. And so here you are, before you were, God was. And it was already written in your book that you were going to come on the stage, so to speak. And then when you leave the stage, God's still going to be there. And he's got that written in his book, too. When you were born and when you die, it's all there. And you come on the stage for one scene. You're just a little bitty two-bit character in the play. But God, he's the main actor. And the director.
Yeah, he wrote the play.
That's right. He wrote the play, and he's the central actor in the play. Mm-hmm. And he's there from the beginning to the end. The play is about him and his purposes. And you come and go for 30 seconds. And there was a time for you to come and a time for you to go. And so God is sovereign. God is bigger than life. God has a plan. Why do we need to see all this? Why do we need to see the sovereignty of God? That he reigns. That he rules over life. Why do we need to see that?
He's God and I am not.
Okay. Yeah. Isn't the temptation to make us the Sovereign One? Isn't it true that we like to run our own lives? And we like to decide when it is time for this and when it is time for that. And we'll make those decisions, thank you very much. And this is saying, you may think you make those decisions, but you really don't make those decisions. God's in charge of all of that. What do you do with some of the negative things in this list? For example, a time to kill, a time to hate, a time for war. There are things in there that maybe can cause some difficulty. A time to hate? A time for war? What do you do with that? How do you understand those things?
Part of God's timing, part of God's plan.
Okay.
Those things fall within God's plan, do you think? Wars and hate?
Okay.
Our fallen world, after the fall, all those things come about.
Okay. So, is this, let me ask if this is what you're saying. To use the stage and the play metaphor, right? Mm-hmm. In the play, wars happen. And killing happens, and hatred happens, and all this stuff happens on the stage. And God, as He has written the play, there's a time for each of those to come in the play, and He makes something beautiful out of it. Is that the idea? I'm asking, is that what you're trying to get at? Is that the idea?
It's scripture. God's got a time for everything, and there is a time for war. To me, it seems to interpret that there's a time when war is appropriate, and there's a time when hate is appropriate.
Okay,
and there's a time when plucking up is appropriate, or to care instead of serve.
Right.
Is that my understanding is, since the play is written by God,
okay,
so He has said, a time to kill, a time to heal. So the time is not based on our ideas. It's not based on our own desire. Say, I want to kill. I want the time to kill. I want the time to heal.
Right.
But it's His timing. Mm-hmm. So every time it's to seek His time, He ask for when should I do this and when should I do that? This is how to say it.
Yes. We do not determine when is it the proper time for this or that. That's something God determines. But yet, this saying there is a time for everything under the sun. And there is a time that God says is appropriate for war. Or a time where it's appropriate to kill or to tear instead of sow. Or to hate. Do you remember a couple weeks ago we were with Mustafa? Mm-hmm. We were talking about injustice. Mm-hmm. And you remember you asked me the question. I look at injustice and I get so angry.
Yes, yes.
That's what you asked me.
Yeah.
And
is it that sin?
What's that?
Is that leading to sin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what did I tell you?
You said, if you're not angry to see these injustice things, that's not improper.
No, it's not. It's not improper at all to be angry at injustice. Mm-hmm. In fact, should you hate injustice? Mm-hmm. You should. Does God hate injustice?
Mm-hmm. I do think so.
He does. He hates it. He hates it. And you should too. Should you hate your own sin?
Yeah.
You should. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a time for hate. It's just a matter of what are we hating? Mm-hmm. There really are things God hates, and there are things you should hate. And if you don't hate them, there's something wrong with you. And so that's true. And that's part of this. There's a time for that. Now, the difficulty, you know, some people can say, it's time to hate, and use that as an excuse when it's not time to hate. And you can hate the wrong things that God, you know, you can hate things that God loves.
Hate the good stuff.
That's right. The key is to match what you do with God. It's like a great dance. And when you dance, the key is to make the movements of the dance fit the music. Okay, God's playing the music. And the dance needs to fit the music. And if the music is calling for hatred in this instance, you hate in that instance. If the music is calling for something else, you do what the music is calling for. But you want to do the dance to the music. Because there's a time for everything in the dance. And that needs to be part of how you see life. So how does God make everything beautiful in its time? So for example, we talked about he hates injustice. But here it is. I mean, it's rampant in our world. How does God make that beautiful? That's what it says. He makes everything beautiful in its time. That means, you know, this morning Laura brought up the Holocaust. God made that beautiful. So, how is it that he makes everything beautiful in its time? Things like injustice and things, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's a very tough question.
He does. He really does. I don't mean that those things themselves are beautiful. They're not. But he can make beauty out of ashes, right? That's how Isaiah puts it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the killing of 6 million Jews in the midst of all that hell on earth, people were being godly and righteous and kind. And kind of like, wow. In the
yeah.
You know, Corey Tinboom is a good example. He's a Dutchman that God used. And,
Yeah,
seeing
that's...
That in the midst of all killing, I mean, I can't imagine that you would be alive to be a Jew in Germany. But the kindness in the midst of the hatred.
Yeah. That's actually an example I used this morning, was Corrie Ten Boom. I talked about her.
Yeah, Corrie Ten Boom, she would speak, and one of the guards came up. She was amazing. She
was thrown in a concentration camp.
Yeah, she survived.
For hiding Jews from the Nazis.
And I think that their sister, some people were killed.
Her entire family was killed in concentration camp.
She was
except for her.
Yeah.
She was released on a clerical error.
Yeah.
Yeah. So God's beauty there. And then one of the guards that came up and killed her family came up. He had become a Christian. You know? Mm-hmm. She said, "I hate that guy," but God says, "No, you need to love him."
She wrestled with that.
Yeah. I mean, wow.
But yeah, that what transformed her soul into the beauty that it was. was the Holocaust. If you took away the Holocaust, her soul would not have been that way. Now, that's not a justification for the Holocaust. All that is a statement that God can take the worst evil you can imagine and still bring something good out of it. And he can do that with anything. You know, all things work together for good, right? For those who love God and are called according to his purpose. That's kind of this verse. Verse 11 is saying something very similar to that. It can work, God can work good out of evil. He can take evil and flip it on its head and bring something good out of it. And he does it without justifying the evil. There's no justification for the Holocaust at all. But it is something about, it does say something about the power and the glory of God and the goodness of God that he's actually able to do that. Verse 11. We looked at the, he's made everything beautiful in its time. Then it gets at, he has put eternity in our hearts. What does that mean?
Was it Lewis Bernalson? Is God shaped by every man's heart?
Okay, yeah.
So God has given us desire in our heart for him.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so every human being is built with something inside them, this sense that there's something more out there than this world, than this life. There is, we have this sense in us that there's got to be more than this. He's put eternity into our hearts. It's built into the software of a human being, if I could put it that way. We're wired to need God, so to speak. So then, how should that affect your life? If this is true, God has put eternity in our hearts, okay, what's that mean for me and how to live my life?
I need to respond with obedience and desire to please him.
Okay. Yeah, if you're built for God, seek God. If you're built for God and you don't seek God, you're wasting your life. You have eternity in your heart. You want him. And you're chasing a job, thinking that's going to make you fulfilled. What a waste. Seek the real thing. Okay, let's get to what you brought up earlier, the last part of verse 11 there. So he's put eternity into a man's heart, yet, so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And so you talked earlier about how that you see that fitting into this, that God has this plan that he's been talking about in chapter 3, right? And we have eternity in our hearts. And part of the fact that we have eternity in our hearts means we'd like to know that plan. That's part of having eternity in your heart. You know what? Cows don't worry about the meaning of life. And neither do snakes, and neither do horses, and neither do any other animals. They're not seeking God. They don't care about the plan, the overall plan of life. All they care about is give me some hay right now. But they're not thinking about bigger picture things, things about purpose and meaning and life and a time for this and a time. They don't care about that stuff. Humans do. Because we have eternity in our hearts. And so, if I could put it as simply as I can, you actually put it this way earlier. God has a plan. We want to know it. But there are things in life we can't figure out. There's this plan that we want to know, but we can't figure it out. That's the idea. And it's true, isn't it? There are all sorts of things you don't understand. Like what? What are some things in life you don't understand?
The Ukraine-Russian war.
Okay, yeah.
Iran, all the people are being killed.
Sure, Iran, and what's going on there now?
A natural disaster happened.
Okay.
People, they suffered, and they just cry out to God. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Why do you do this to me?
Okay, so, suffering.
Yeah, don't understand why it happens to me. Why?
Yeah. Like the flood along that creek in 37.
That's right. Yeah, last summer, that flood.
That summer, 37 kids. God, why did you kill 37 kids? That innocent.
That's right.
Some people aren't saved.
Why?
Yeah.
And why some people aren't saved.
Yeah. Why is this person still an unbeliever? I've been praying for her for a long time. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Yeah, my friend Tina is still not a believer, and she's developing all kinds.
And just said, this is God to make everything beautiful.
That's right.
What? It's beautiful, but it's suffering. It's beautiful.
Suffering. I'm going to be beautiful with suffering now.
That's right. The beauty is in its time. You may not see the beauty now, but in glory, it's going to be another story. And it may be glory before we see the beauty of many things. And we look back on earth and we see all of the suffering and all of the pain and whatnot. But here's one of the things about suffering. Mm-hmm. Suffering mm-hmm. makes glory more glorious. You and I are going to rejoice more than the angels. Because the angels haven't had to go through the pit. They've been in heaven the whole time. They don't understand pain, and they don't understand suffering, and they don't understand any of that you and I do. And when we get to heaven, our joy is going to exceed their joy. Not because of what's there, but because of what we have gone through that they have not. He who has been, Jesus said, he who has been forgiven much loves much. He who has been forgiven little loves little. The more pain and suffering you go through, the greater your joy when it ends. And the angels aren't even going to understand that. They can't understand it. They may understand it from an intellectual standpoint, but not from an experiential standpoint. And so all this pain and suffering, one day in glory, we're gonna look back on what we went through and the light and momentary afflictions, as Paul puts it, that we went through, and we're gonna be just praising God because there's no more tears. So then, okay, so there's all this stuff we don't understand, most of it dealing with pain and suffering.
Yeah. So we still don't understand, don't know what God's plan is.
That's right. We don't.
We don't know.
I don't mean we know nothing. We know some things about what God is doing, but we want to know the whole thing.
Yeah, we want to know more.
We want everything. Yeah. And we're not going to have everything. And so then, how do you handle life when you don't understand it? Let me rephrase that question. How should you handle life when you don't understand it?
Trust and obey.
Okay, trust.
There's no other way. Jesus, play that every day.
Trust and obey. So in this text, what gives you reason to trust?
I might have said this morning, but it seems like an orderly thing.
Yeah.
There's an orderliness in these scriptures to God.
Yeah.
And so maybe things will continue to work to the conclusions that God has.
Okay.
For us.
Okay.
And that is a good thing.
Yeah.
It should enable us to have hope when things are hard.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's going to make everything beautiful. Mm-hmm.
That's what it says.
In his time.
In its time.
Mm-hmm. So
he's going to make it beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't understand it, but it's going to be beautiful. That both of those, they're actually in the same verse, both those ideas, right?
Yeah.
They're in the same verse. It's going to be beautiful and you're not going to understand it. Okay.
But
so,
we know it's beautiful, but this is what we know.
Yes.
We know it's beautiful. And here is sort of like your question is how to handle our whole life even we don't know the whole plan.
Yeah.
Right? So based on what we know is God has a plan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The fact is he has a plan,
mm-hmm.
and he made everything beautiful.
Yes.
This is what we know.
Yes.
So for me, how to handle my life is to I do my part,
mm-hmm.
and to put the things I don't know, the result on God's hand.
Yeah.
And enjoy the beauty he created.
Okay.
So that might be the answer.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have to trust him.
Yes, trust him. Yes.
If you don't trust him, then you're going to, and because you're not going to understand. And if you don't understand his plan and you don't trust him, what are you holding on to?
Yes.
You know, you're not really holding on to anything.
Yes. Yeah.
You have to trust him.
You don't trust him, your life is meaningless. He told you.
That's
you.
Right.
It's meaningless.
Exactly.
You become bitter.
It becomes very bitter. It can. That's right. Okay, here's what I want to do, just to close our time. I want you to think of something you don't understand. I'm just going to give you a minute to do that. Then I'm going to ask you to give that to God, whatever that thing is that you don't understand. And, you know, can you trust God with that? And give it to him and say, Lord, I entrust this with you. I don't understand it, but I'm going to trust you. Because that's what we need to do. And that's hard to do. But that's what we need to do. And so I'm going to just give you just a moment right now to think of what that would be.